It is time for another episode of African Analysis. We get to chat to JJ Cornish every week. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and today's adventure begins in the UN Security Council. Well, actually, Western Sahara. So, JJ, very nice to hear from you, not to see you today. He's in an undisclosed location. You know, he's busy talking to diplomats and doing dangerous things. So, JJ, we've spoken about Western Sahara so much. Give us an update.
Well, this is it. The Western Sahara illegally
is that where occupied... Is that where you are at the moment, by the way? We just
sad to say. What you heard was the sand in my tackies, but that could have been from the Seychelles, you know. I'm not revealing where I am. You know, Gareth, Western Sahara is 74 illegally occupied by Morocco when Spain left it, when the dictator Franco died, and they just gave up Western Sahara. Morocco, Mauritania took over. The Polisario Front has fought and kicked the Mauritanians out, but the Moroccans just occupied that land, and that was it. So they've been there since then. The Security Council has voted several times to tell them it doesn't belong to them. And just a week ago, the European Court of Justice, the Supreme Court, ruled that Western Sahara is completely apart from Morocco, and that, in fact, it's a land that has a right to independence. And they fought a bitter 12-year war. And when that ended, Morocco agreed to have a referendum, but then has reneged on that, and they said they would give some form of autonomy to Western Sahara. And that has existed since 1981. Now, recently, France and Spain have both said, well, that seems like a good idea. It suddenly occurred to them, and they have accepted the Moroccan idea of autonomy. But the ruling of the European Court has... kiboshed that and said, you know, this has nothing to do with Morocco. It's a colony that deserves independence and should have a referendum. And the Polisario is the legitimate representative, liberation movement representative of them. So that's where that stands. Now, Emmanuel Macron, he made the decision to recognize this so-called autonomy of Morocco before he even had a government, you know, having had those really divisive elections. He didn't even have a government when he did it. Last week, he went to Morocco, and they signed a number of trade deals and so on. But strangely, having met the king, and this is unprecedented in diplomatic terms, there was no communique. But there were reports at the time of Morocco spying on France, on Macron, and nine members of his erstwhile cabinet. And I don't know if that is the cause of the awkwardness, why there has been no communique. In Spain, the Moroccans used this Perseus, which is the Israeli spying system, tapping phones, getting data, that sort of thing. And the Spanish parliamentarians have been absolutely vociferous about the fact that the Spanish Premier Pedro Sanchez is actually being blackmailed by Morocco, which is why he has taken the step. So it's, you know, it's filled with intrigue, fantastic stuff. But now the mandate of the United Nations mission to prepare for the referendum has been extended. It's sometimes called a peacekeeping mission, but it's not that. It's a referendum that they're supposed to be preparing for. And that has been extended, and believe it or not, France voted for that. So having accepted some sort of autonomy by Morocco, it votes for extending this referendum mission. So it's a very strange situation, and France is looking quite awkward in this, because as a permanent member of the Security Council, they have taken Morocco to task for illegally occupying the Western Sahara.
I mean, when you've got the French and the Moroccans in one room, you're not quite sure whether either of them are honest, you know, kind of they're meeting on honest, good faith terms. But Macron is scheduled to visit there, you say?
He has visited. He visited last week and signed 20 trade deals, but there was no communique at the end of this visit. Now, the King of Morocco, M3, he put out a very, very long communique that made absolutely no mention of the Western Sahara. And that meeting came as the European Court of Justice, the Supreme Court, after 9 years of litigation, finally said any deals Morocco has made involving Western Sahara, its goods from the land or the sea, the fish or the minerals or the crops, are null and void. They had no business. They'd actually stolen those things from Western Sahara. They have no business doing it. And I think that's causing the awkwardness in France because, you know, they, as a member of the Security Council, they're supposed to be protecting Western Sahara as a colony. So it's an awkward thing. And I think Macron is hugely embarrassed by this.
Well, it sounds horrific. And I mean, we just almost every second week now, we are revisiting the Western Sahara. And it seems that there's little to no progress being made there. JJ, Kenya, however, finally, they've got a deputy prime minister, right?
Kindiki Kithure, sworn in. The Supreme Court there, or the appeal court, said, please don't do anything until we've settled this, because we want to have Rigathi Gachagua, who was impeached for supposedly organizing demonstrations against the president. He appealed that impeachment, but now that seems to have been accepted. So they now have a deputy sworn in. But the most interesting thing with Kenya is it's just taken its seat on the UN Human Rights Commission. And Western powers, certainly Western envoys in Kenya, have expressed all kinds of doubts and misgivings about that, saying that there have been enforced disappearances and arbitrary arrests of opponents of the president. I mean, he is a tough guy. As you see, he impeached his deputy on quite nefarious grounds. And so they're saying, while they're doing this, these guys shouldn't really be on the Human Rights Commission, or certainly can't fulfill their role there as champion of human rights if they're behaving like that towards opponents of the government in their own country.
There are two stories closer to home, which I've only picked up a little bit in the headlines. I believe there's all kinds of chaos going on in Mozambique at the moment. And then, of course, Botswana has elected a new government, and they've basically thrown out Ian Khama's party. 6 seats or something they've got left in the entire parliament.
Can you believe it? They had 30, well, it's 30, 30, it's a 61-seat parliament, and they had a majority there. Now you have a human rights lawyer who is the new premier, and he's been congratulated by the region. You know, I found this with covering a number of elections in Botswana, that their opposition was their own worst enemy. You know, they were taking, they would come apart shortly before the elections. So while the Botswana, the ruling party, Botswana Democratic Party, ruled since for 58 years, in fact, many's the time that they could have taken a hiding earlier, but didn't because of the opposition coming apart themselves. This time they've held together the umbrella for democratic change, and Duma Boko, the human rights lawyer, he's now the new premier, and let's wait and see. You know what Mokgweetsi Masisi, of course, he was fingered or picked up by Ian Khama, the president, who did 2 terms there. So then the two of them fell out over things like elephant hunting, this approach towards Zimbabwe, joining the Union of Liberation Movements, 7 countries that had liberation movements. And then, you know, he believed that this was compromising the Botswana party and Botswana itself. But the fall, 50% fall in the price of diamonds, because, you know, there's the whole marketing approach about the diamonds are the girl's best friend and so on, has all come apart. And you're having gemstones that are made, chemically made, you know, and artificially made diamonds. So that's come apart. And diamonds was 80% of Botswana's GDP. So, we had 45% youth unemployment. Well, that's a figure that wouldn't shock South Africans. It's about the same as here. I remember the Tswanas used to take great joy in telling us we're not letting the wealth in this country trickle down, follow our example, and you wouldn't be having the problems you're having. Well, that's exactly the problems that Mokgweetsi Masisi was having. The wealth wasn't trickling down. There was also claims of, there have been claims of corruption and so on. So a new government in Botswana will be a good thing for us. So that's on our west. To our east, of course, the new government is in. Well, it's not a new government. It's the Frelimo government, which also has been in power since independence. That's in the early 70s. And they have a young new president in there who was the first guy to be president, and not to have a Chapo, Daniel Chapo, and not to have been alive when Mozambique got independence. But there were widespread claims of irregularities. Even some of the elections observers said that things had gone wrong, and so what they're having is people in the streets. At least 13 people died of police gunshot wounds, and others have been injured and have been hospitalized. So that unrest seems to have quietened down, and we do hope that things can settle down in Mozambique, because, you know, when it's become fractious there, we South Africans feel the effect very, very dramatically. The Mozambicans just pour over the border into South Africa in search of safety. Many of them walking across the Kruger National Park to get here. So to our east and to our west, we've had these changes, the seismic changes in Botswana, but peaceful, relatively peaceful.
Who do you go to for the news on these things? Because I wouldn't have known about Mozambique or Botswana if it wasn't for Twitter. And I mean, I'm not on as much as some people are. What are your sources, except for the people themselves, when it comes to hearing what's going on in these countries? What do you regard as like the kinds of trustworthy, credible?
I speak to people in those countries. I don't trust social media with anything, Right. You know, the news organizations have come apart. I mean, yeah. I still read Reuters quite assiduously, the BBC, National Public Radio. I get all of them. I read, get some Xinhua, and I get Sputnik. I read many of those things. But, you know, when I visit a country, I take my little black book and I come away with 20 or 30 new names that I've got people to call. And in Mozambique, I've been going there for many, many years. I have a number of people happy to speak to me. And there's a particular journalist that are still online working at in fact, in both the countries, Botswana and Mozambique, they've been mostly Western diplomats, but old guys, you know, from the liberation days, people who would be my senior as activists. And I'm pretty senior. well, I am. And in fact, I become even more senior today. You should say to me, Joyeux anniversaire, because I've become even more senior today.
But, today is today's birthday. Yeah,
this very day, the day that you can't see my smiling visage.
I'm still pleased. I'm pleased that you devoted some of your time on your birthday to be with us. Thank you very much. Always good to check in with you. JJ Cornish, everybody, and African Analysis brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. We will return in 2 weeks' time.